65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. Broadcasting live from Media Row at the Panther Arena inside the RNC. WTMJ at the Republican National Convention. This is Spanning the State. Here are your hosts, Brian Noonan and Kristen Bry.
We are so back, baby.
Yeah,
day
this is,
two.
This is nice. It seems a much more laid-back day here at the RNC. Things, the official session doesn't start till 5, so Media Row a little lighter today, but it was it's great. We are back. I'm excited. I'm still excited to be here.
How we separated.
We did.
We finished the show. We stuck around the area, but you and I... departed paths.
Yes. We tried. First, we were misled by our good friend.
Oh, yeah. Vince was like, oh, yeah, you just traded that pass. You can get on the floor. They took one look at our pass, and whatever they were looking for, they're like, that ain't it. And so we did not get floor passes yesterday, but we did both go to Fiserv and then split up.
We were walking around because, quite frankly, people think that now that we do a show together, we're together 24-7.
Twinsies.
Yeah, and it's...
just best friends.
Contractually, it's 2 hours, and then we both go our separate ways. But, yeah, so you were looking for people. I was looking for people. Did you have any luck?
I certainly... There's a lot of people. I did not see anyone for lack of a better word, recognize. I didn't see any famous news people, actual celebrities, political celebrities. I saw tons of outfits and other media people. But the best outfit I saw was a homemade dress from a woman from Idaho, almost looking like a Southern Belle. Huge, like, hoop skirt.
Okay.
And she obviously made this Sunday before she flew out because it was a, like, applique stitch of the famous photo from Saturday.
What?
With Trump's fist in the air. And on the bottom it said, America's comeback. And unfortunately, I interviewed her because I was like, how did it take to make this dress? And my audio didn't work. But I did get a picture of the dress. I will post it on my social media later.
Yes, please do.
That is the kind of... elaborate. I don't want to say costumes because that feels, but like the attire.
Yeah.
Not everyone, but some people. It's extravagant.
Well, conventions are almost like Mardi Gras, where people dress up. They wear flamboyant things. They show their spirit. They're having a good time. That probably fits in your scavenger hunt somewhere, doesn't it?
It does. And so I just posted the rules of the scavenger hunt. I'm trying to get to 100 points by the end of this convention.
That should be easy.
And so I have attire, people, and miscellaneous. All of the different things in those categories are somewhere between 1 to 5 points, depending on how hard I think they will be to find.
Okay.
If I get a picture of the thing, it's 1x. Mm. A picture with the thing, it's 2x the points.
Oh, nice.
And if I actually interview the person, I'm giving myself 3x. So I am doing after our show every day. I'm going out into the wild to try to find things.
Very nice. Well, I was... as much as outgoing as I seem here, it's easy for me to be outgoing behind a microphone. One-on-one, I am not very outgoing. But the pressure to deliver during the RNC for this show and for the station was weighing on me yesterday. So I was scouring everywhere I would. My head was on a swivel. And after I watched J.D. Vance get announced and have his picture taken, which was just being in the room...
When
that's all going on, that was very, very exciting. And it doesn't matter. I would tell you it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on, because this is an integral part of democracy, and it was happening right in front of me. So I was very excited. Then I came out and I happened to notice a hair and makeup suite, and I was like, oh, that's who walks by me? But ABC anchor and reporter Martha Raddatz. I watch Martha Raddatz. I enjoy her coverage. I think she's a very good reporter and an anchor. And so I summoned all my courage, and I went up and introduced myself. And then I said, do you have a couple minutes for some questions? And she said, yes. And I think she might have thought I was only asking for a picture. But then I did get a chance to ask Martha Raddatz a couple questions. And the first question I asked her was, do the events of Saturday, the attempted assassination of Donald Trump, change how you prepare or present during this convention? And this is what she said.
It was a terrible day for America.
Right.
It was a more terrible day for the Trump family and for the firefighter who lost his life and those two people who were critically injured. We have to keep that in the back of our minds. I do think it will change the tone of this convention. Donald Trump himself has said he ripped up his speech. Our John Carl just spoke to former President Trump, and President Trump told him that he had ripped up his speech and was going to talk about unity. We did hear Mitch McConnell booed in there, however. So it is not universal, but it does change the tone. You couldn't help watching the Trump children walk in today and remember two days ago they almost lost their dad. And I think, so yes, I think it changes your perspective on this convention and what things are important. So
there you go. So that was North Reddit. It was very exciting.
Relieve you of those? Are you feeling more uninhibited today?
You know what it was? Like, if I was walking up to Kid Rock, I wouldn't have a problem. But she saw my badge that said reporter, and she said, oh, a good karma reporter. I'm like, well, I'm not really a reporter.
Own it, Brian.
I'm a reporter now.
Absolutely.
All right. Speaking
of reporters, big broadcasting background. He used to be mayor. He's going to be with us next. Our colleague, teammate, Steve Scafidi is going to join us right after this. It's Spanning the State.
Pursuant to Rule 40D of the Rules of the Republican Party, I formally declare President Donald J. Trump and J.D. Vance as the Republican nominees for President and Vice President of the United States.
That is the Speaker of the House introducing the new vice presidential candidate. This is Spanning the State. We are live from the Republican National Convention in UW Panther Arena, Media Row. I'm Brian Noonan.
I am Kristen Bry, and joining us live right in front of us, actually not on camera, so if you are watching the live stream, he is here. Oh, I think your mic's not on yet.
You think I'd know that after all these years? You're missing all the dress-up that I did.
You look great.
For second day in a row for no reason because I got wiped out by a breaking news story 2 days in a row.
So what other media hits have you done so far?
I did a BBC interview at midnight last night.
How'd that go?
It was good. Great questions. A lot of the stuff that you were going to talk about today is what was it like in the room? And I tell you, I've never been to a convention.
Okay.
It was amazing in there. I don't care what your political party is. There's energy in there. You mentioned when J.D. Vance hits the room, I could see they were clearing that space for him. It was lightning in there.
So I have to call you out on something before we get your reaction.
All right, what is it?
Friday when you sat in for Kristen, we had a great time, but you made a bold prediction.
Oh, yes.
You predicted, and I don't have the tape.
I think it was a long shot prediction, wasn't it?
I was going to say, was this a desire or a prediction?
Well, both.
Well, you said Nikki Haley was going to be the pick.
I said it was a long shot prediction, I think. Let's get to the tape.
Have the tape. You just have to trust me on this.
No, to Kristen's point, that was a choice that made sense because, as I said yesterday many times on my show and other shows, the race is over if that's the pick, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And it is interesting. I want to get your take. I think there's an interesting thing as far as what J.D. Vance as the nominee for vice president indicates. I think there's something interesting about how young he is. He's a year older than
39.
I am. He's 39.
Yep.
But he is very much a populist. I would not say he is as appealing to maybe the moderates who liked Nikki Haley. So what was your impression, regardless of whether you were surprised or not, but what do you think this says about the platform and the party?
I think Donald Trump picked someone that's going to endorse whatever he says.
Okay.
Because J.D. Vance, if we forget, was very critical of Trump in 2016.
He called him a Hitler.
Yes. Now, he also, and I'm going to paraphrase this because it's a longer sentence, but I was wrong about Donald Trump. Maybe America is wrong about Donald Trump. That's where he's at now. So, I mean, that's pretty 180 from where he was. The youth thing is important because what have we been talking about in this race? Everybody's old.
Yeah.
This guy's 39. His wife, check into her story. Amazing story. Her background.
Indian immigrant, right?
Yes, raised
in California,
San Diego. Super smart.
They met at Yale Law School.
Yes. High-profile attorney, worked on some big cases. Oh, by the way, she's a clerk for Justice Roberts.
Yeah.
Heavyweights. Mm-hmm. That's a nice ally if you're running for vice president along with Donald Trump.
To kind of go back to Kristen's point, what does this pick say to you about all the talk of unity and bringing people together and appealing to a wider base? Does this pick go toward that or against it?
No, I don't think that does anything. I think it has nothing to do with that. This is somebody that Donald Trump wanted. His sons, also, by the way, don't forget Eric and Don Jr. also wanted this pick.
I know. We talked about this a little bit. It's escaping me who was in the room, but apparently it went something along the lines as Donald Trump's sons chanting JD. Yeah. Like, JD, J. It's like really, they wanted him over Doug Burgum.
Like everything surrounding Donald Trump, there's a lot of weirdness to this.
Imagining that scene, it's a little frat row for me, but you know.
Yeah, I'm good with chanting. You know, whatever they were doing the F Biden yesterday, which is unfortunate.
They were doing fight.
Fights.
That was a little scary.
Saying you're going to be unifying the country and actually delivering on that, two different things. I think we're in this moment where good things can happen, but let's see. My moment will be when Donald Trump hits the stage and he starts talking. What's that message? Let's hear the unification then.
When we come back, we're going to go take a break right now. When we come back, I actually want to chanting fight. I want to hear your thoughts on how hard it is to get metaphorical but violent rhetoric out of politics. So we will do that after this. It's Spanning the State.
It is Spanning the State, and we are live at the RNC on Media Row. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry, and we are here with our teammate Steve Scafidi. And before we went to break, I asked you, after Saturday, I think one of the things that got highlighted and also a call to move forward from is how much violent language, though a metaphor, is used in political language. Is that how hard is that habit going to be to break?
Very difficult. I mean, it's out there, and it continues. Let's not presume that it all stopped. Now, a large volume of it stopped from people that probably weren't very good at it anyway.
Right.
We're just like throwing stuff out because it's easy to do on an anonymous social media account. So I think the volume has decreased, but there are still outliers that are still doing it, and I don't know if that's going to change. And you were asking me before about this ticket and what that means. We're going to learn a lot this week about what they really mean from their heart on bringing people together. But again, I caution people. What you say at a convention is not necessarily what you're going to do as president or vice president. So let's not read too much into that. They have an opportunity. Will they fulfill it? I have no idea. They're not necessarily, these two men are not known for that generally.
And this nominee is known for outrageous statements,
absolutely,
outrageous postings. So nothing really surprises people anymore. But to your point,
are you talking about JD or Trump? Or
I'm talking about Trump.
Okay.
You know, we're used to Trump's, you know, posts and tirades.
Right.
But just the difference in tone from Saturday when somebody tried to kill him to the next day what he was posting about how horrible people were, it's like, I don't know how much temperament there's going to be.
Messaging matters, but a commitment to what Kristen's talking about, sort of the calming and pacifying of our country when it comes to all this wild rhetoric. And we were talking before the show, I've been a victim of it. People have attacked me in direct messages and certainly on social media, on the phone voicemails they've left. I don't like it, and I would love to see that. I think that's what we're trying to do when we broadcast about these kind of events, to try to dial it down as a group.
Yeah, but haven't we crossed the Rubicon on that? We're way past.
That's the bigger question. Right?
We're way past civility anymore.
I hope that's not going to not the way it's going to be. That's my personal hope. I think we can actually bring it back, but it's going to take people that are willing to change their behavior.
Yes.
Yes, it's not impossible. It's just difficult.
All right. Well, switching gears a little bit, you had some interesting guests on your show this morning.
Yeah, we had Eric Hovde, candidate for U.S. Senate. He was.
Was that your first time interviewing?
No, I've interviewed a couple times on the phone, but first time in person. The mustachioed gentleman, as I called him when I introduced him. He's actually a really interesting dude. I love people that have sort of made things of their lives, and he's certainly done that on the business side. The question is, can he do it on the Senate side or have a successful campaign? I have no idea. He is not that atypical of most candidates. They sort of say the same things, right?
Yeah.
Can you do it? He's got a tough opponent. Tammy Baldwin's almost unbeatable in Senate races. And then we had, the name escapes me while I'm thinking about it. Who do we have? Oh, Jim Jordan,
Badger.
Captivate. He would have talked Badgers the whole time.
Really?
Oh, my
God.
He started with that. He kept going. I had to stop him. He's got relatives are still here. He knows the states. And at first I thought he was blowing smoke because, like, you guys were walking
everybody,
around.
Sure.
We love Wisconsin.
Yeah,
like
everybody loves Wisconsin.
Like, less than sincerely. Yeah, okay. But he meant it. He was living that.
Well, he's lived here.
Yes.
Did you ask about the jacket? What's his deal?
I didn't ask about that. No. What is the deal with that?
It bothers
Maybe
me.
Maybe he's a profuse sweater.
That could be. Is there anybody, other than the top two names on the ticket, is there anybody that for the next 2 days, you are dying to get on the Political Power Hour.
Oh, I love to have Jake Tapper on. I'm a big fan of Jake Tapper's. Watch his show every day. If I don't see it live, I watch it on DVR. If I could be younger, which would be awesome, and have a TV show, that's the TV show I would have.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. A big fan. So I'm going to actually go to Pfizer, and I'm going to try to track him down because I can get over there close by. So we'll see.
Well, you're very well connected.
We'll find out.
Who else are you going to be appearing on? Maybe that big network show.
Maybe Katie Tour tomorrow. It's like 3 days in a row, big news stories. But isn't that the nature of this week? Like how?
Yeah, everything's a big news story.
I can't say it on the radio because they said you're bumped for like the second day in a row. And I go, no worries. You know what happens. You know, and then I got no response. Oh, we'll see how it goes. And they have like, here's the other thing. They have like 18 producers for one show.
Yeah.
I don't even have a showrunner for my show. Are you kidding me?
Are you a little jealous?
I am very jealous.
Wow. Talk to
and I'll bring that up with Katie Tour tomorrow on
there
the program.
There you go. You're like, you know what I would do if I had this many resources? lot more.
I would be frickin' Jake Tapper.
The show would be so much better.
Come on now.
All right. Steve Scafidi, we can't wait to hear what else you get into this week. Maybe we'll see you either tomorrow or Thursday.
I look forward to it.
But for now, ABC News and local headlines are next.
It's Spanning the State live from UW Panther Arena, or UWM Panther Arena.
Well, we're going to get to that later, of all the different names this place
has. Anyway, we're on Media Row. It's the Republican National Convention. We'll be here all week. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bright. And Brian, while we are surrounded by lots of fervent Republicans this week.
Very fervent.
Next month, there's going to be lots of fervent Democrats in Chicago. But would it surprise you to know that 44% of Americans self-identify as centrists?
No, that makes sense because we always hear from the loud extremes. We don't really hear from the people in the middle.
Yeah, the people who are less loud.
Right. People are just like, oh, boy.
Well, there are lots of those people, and there's a feeling that those people are lost in the middle, including our next guest, former TV news anchor and the last Republican congressman to represent Dane County in Wisconsin, Scott Klug is joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Hold on. There we go.
Nice microphone.
There
Sorry.
We go.
TV guy doesn't know how to use one.
Welcome.
So,
yeah, welcome. The tie here is my dad worked on your campaign finance committee.
He did indeed. Yeah. So when I first ran in 90, when Madison actually had Republicans in it. So I think.
Well, I think they're still there. They're just not elected in office anymore.
I think before me, it was Teddy Roosevelt was the last one on the UW campus when he dedicated the red gym. But no, this is. I'm here today actually doing some stuff for the U.S. State Department for embassies overseas. But I'm here as a political orphan because I got stopped in a grocery store in Madison pulling a bag of granola off the top shelf, and some guy pokes me in the back, and I turn around and look, and he goes, Klug. It's like, what? What the? And I can't finish the sentence on radio. And he said the Republicans are running around the country taking middle school books off the shelves, and the Democrats are trying to take the stove out of my kitchen. It's like, who signed up for these people?
Yeah.
And since then, the more people we talk to, I think people are just exasperated and bewildered. And, you know, you saw the poll coming into this convention, 70% of the American public doesn't want to vote for Biden or Trump. It's really pretty crazy.
And so going in, so you have a podcast now called Lost in the Middle. What do you identify the middle as?
I don't, you know, if you try to do it on policy issues, you'll drive yourself crazy. I think it's really more tonal. You know, democracy is based on fights over solutions to problems. It's been going on since, you know, the founding fathers, meant for God's sakes, Aaron Burr and Hamilton had a duel over stuff. So it's not always been calm and quiet. But at the end of the day, people want folks who are willing to collaborate. And I use that word intentionally, not compromise, because compromise sounds like I gave something up to get something. Mm-hmm. Collaborate means you can figure out some place in the center. And the story for me of the last couple of months is, you know, the two of us and a nearby George Webb and two other people we pull off the stool can figure out an immigration plan and a napkin in about 15 minutes, right? It's pretty simple. You want border security. You want to figure out some kind of pathway for the kids who came here and don't have citizenship. And there's a lot of people, you know, working tough jobs who've been here for years paying taxes and keeping their nose clean. It should be pretty easy to solve. So this time, the Democrats and Republicans cut a deal in the Senate. They hand it to the House. And the Speaker says, nah, I don't think so, because they wanted a deal for Trump. Well, 2006. This time the House gets the deal. They send it to the Senate, and Schumer says, no thanks. We want this as an issue for Barack Obama. So I think most of the American public really feel like a pox on both of your houses. We hire you to get stuff done, and what do, except try to figure out ways to get elected again?
As you look at the Republican Party now, is there anybody who kind of fits that bill that's more toward the middle, or are those voices just immediately drowned out?
I think the Senate is better than the House is. The House is so highly polarized, and really in the House, listen to this statistic, if I get this right, I sound like Donald Trump in a debate. I'm not quite sure what the number is, but it's like 15 or 16, 17. There's only 16 districts in the country where that person, the member of Congress, got elected in a district that was carried by the president of the other party. So basically, that means 400 of the 19 seats are wired. And so you wake up in the morning and the only thing you worry about is a primary. And so you take one more step to the left or one more step to the right. That's part of the problem. And then I think, says the former TV news guys and talking to radio people, I think the media is a big part of the problem, because in a lot of cases, you know, if you're MSNBC or Fox, you go as far right or as far left as you can to hold on to subscribers. And I think one of the great mysteries of this week is, you know, how long did it take the New York Times to figure out Joe Biden had an issue? They have the largest bureau in Washington, D.C. And there's actually something in criminal law called willful blindness. So it's based on a case in Mexico where a guy was offered weed to buy, and he said, no thanks. And they said, well, you would take this across the border for me for $250. He said, no problems. Goes across the border, the cops arrest him. They go, what's in the trunk? He goes, I have no idea. So he gets prosecuted literally for that. And there's a jury instruction called the ostrich instruction, which means it's in plain sight of you and you choose to ignore it. And so if you look at the New York Times, These are my middle voters. If you look at the New York Times, they picked a huge fight with the Wall Street Journal the first week of June, because the Wall Street Journal did this big article based on interviews with 40 people who'd been in meetings with Biden or briefed on the meetings with Biden, and they said, there's a problem there.
Yeah.
And the New York Times called it, it's Republican talking points. And 3 weeks later, they tell Biden he's got to step down.
Yeah.
So did you know what was going on and just chose to ignore it? Or how bad can your reporting bureau be with 87 people in the city?
Well, and it's interesting because we're actually tomorrow going to have a chance to talk to Katie Kinsbury, who has Wisconsin ties but is an opinion editor at the New York Times. And that's part of the reason that I want to talk to her, as far as what the decisions that go in, because obviously opinion is different than the reporting, and how do those decisions get made as far as the columnists versus the guest essays versus the editorial board?
Well, okay, ask her whatever you want. It's like either you knew and you didn't want to publish it, or he went downhill in 3 weeks. I mean, it's one or the other, you know. And I think the American public can see that he's clearly got challenges, and I feel sorry for him.
Scott Klug is our guest. His podcast, Lost in the Middle. You look at the nomination of J.D. Vance. Donald Trump's at the top of the ticket. Does that give any indication to you of any move toward the middle, or are we going to move more to the right? Where do you think the Republican Party is going to go with this?
I think the Republican Party now is firmly populist. I think they've essentially set their tone based on small-town America. Very conservative on cultural issues, where Vance is. I think not exactly fond of foreign entanglements based on his experience in Iraq. And I think largely will push a lot of social issues. I mean, it's a loser in the suburbs, right? I'm a libertarian Republican. I don't want the government involved in my life or my business, my faith, anything else. Leave me alone. That's where I come from. But I think there's other people who think that the government has got to set a social agenda and execute on it. It will, for example, it'll pay well with Hispanic voters, right? Hispanic voters are shifting more conservative. They tend to be Catholic. They tend to be evangelical. They have big families. They can't figure out what woke stuff is in New York and Boston. And so the Democrats are doing it to themselves. So I think Vance was not my first choice. I would have picked Marco Rubio, establishment Republican that I am, Rhino. Because I thought, first of all...
Your words.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Lots of words from people. I hear it constantly. Because he's a Spanish speaker, right? And if you want to court the Spanish vote, what an intriguing idea. You actually have somebody where Spanish is a native language. And sure, I understand Puerto Ricans are Democrats and Cubans are Republicans and everything else in the world, but it would be a signal to the Hispanic community.
Yeah.
And he also has spent years on the Foreign Policy Committee. And it would be nice to have somebody, because I'm not sure the president's instincts on foreign policy are always in the right direction. It's a dangerous world out there. I mean, Gaza and Israel are very scary. You know, we all know what's going on in Ukraine.
Yeah.
China, you get up every morning worried about what China's doing. So I understand why he did it. I'm not sure it broadens the appeal. I think it just, they dig the hole a little deeper.
All right, Scott Klug, where can people find Lost in the Middle?
The place you find all those podcasts, just lostmiddle.com. And the formal title, Lost in the Middle, America's Political Orphans. And thanks for having me on. Have a great week.
Thanks
so
for
much,
being
Scott.
Here.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Unlimited, citing Unlimited News Time at 1:45. This is Spanning the State.
This building is the home of the UW-Milwaukee Panthers. This is the Panther Arena.
It is the Panther Arena. We are inside it because that's where Media Row is for the Republican National Convention. This is Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And yes, UWM Panther Arena is not always been named this.
No, it's it was built in 1950, and it was called, any guess?
The Milwaukee Arena?
Yes, they went with the
obvious.
I was
trying to think of which one came first.
The Milwaukee Arena. It became the Milwaukee Exposition Convention Center and Arena in 1974. I like that they went from the shortest name possible to just adding as many descriptors as they could. And then it got its current name in 2014 when UW-Milwaukee bought the naming rights for the venue. So there you go.
So there you go. And so this is where, have you been in here previously?
I have not.
I have been in here for a handful of Admirals games,
okay,
which are very fun. I have been in here for at least two Wave indoor soccer games.
Nice.
When my brother played for UW Panthers, but they did not play in here when...
Where did they play?
I forgot.
Okay.
Because I was still in high school, and I remember we would just drive down from Madison and watch them. But it was not here. It was something more, like, it was closer to campus. Yeah, but it is... It's old. I mean, it's like the original place that people came and watched. I mean, it was where the Bucks were playing for a long time and the Mecca floor.
And that's that was so funny. We were talking about this morning, and our great producer, Rhea, did not realize, she did not believe that the Bucks used to play here and that they came back for like a special anniversary game to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the arena. And now here's a question as a political person who loves the politics. Has Donald Trump ever been here before? Even though now Thursday he will speak at the Pfizer Forum.
He has been here before.
When would that have been?
I forgot what year it was, but he had a rally here.
Yes, he had a rally here. What did I want to say? I want to say
21?
It was 2020. January 2020.
All right, so it was the last election cycle.
January 2020, he did a campaign rally right here as part of his reelection bid. He talked about national security. So there you go. So we have politics in here, sports in here. It sounds like they were doing, it almost sounds like cattle shows and stuff with the expo. When I hear exhibition
expo?
Center or expo center, I think you're doing all kind of things. You're doing a car show, you're doing a cattle show, you're doing trading cards, you're doing everything. So it's a nice size arena. I can see for an Admirals game it would be great because even the seats way up high, which are usually the best for hockey, are not that far from...
Why are seats up high better for hockey?
Because you can see the entire ice, and you can watch where the puck goes. So the higher you are, the more ice you see, and the more of the puck you can see traveling around.
Isn't it? Maybe it's just as a nearsighted person, it'd be harder to find the puck if I was further away.
It turns out I used to think that way too, and it seems now sitting on the glass is great because you realize one how big and fast the hockey players are and how hard they slam each other into the boards. So if that's what you're coming for, then sit on the glass.
Okay.
But if you get up top, you can see things going a little more. So this is nice. Tomorrow we will give a little highlight on the Baird Center.
Yep.
Little info there. And then on Thursday, because that's the day the RNC is wrapping things up, then we will we'll talk about Pfizer Forum.
Absolutely. All right, well, coming up next hour, of course, we're going to spin around the state.
Yes.
We're going to talk about some of the more interesting quintessential Wisconsin things that happened yesterday, including another controversy over beer. Maybe 360 pounds of cheese, and a pastor who did a Trump impression.
So that has to make you feel good, right? Because now you have been emboldened to joke again. Yesterday you were a little trepidatious. You were questioning, when can I joke again?
What? Yeah, and I feel like it's still, you're treading a little lightly. But as far as, a pastor from Kenosha
sure.
doing a Trump impression, it's like, all right,
There's some jokes that are allowed.
Yes. Some people may say the Band-Aid falling off, looking like it was barely hanging on. That may be a joke. I wouldn't say that, but some people might say it, Kristen. All right, listen, when we come back, we are going to spin the state, and so much more, because this is Spanning the State.
Time to take a spin around Wisconsin and find stories you might have missed. This is WTMJ at the Republican National Convention. Now broadcasting live from Media Row at the Panther Arena inside the RNC. Here's Spinning the State on Spanning the State with Kristen Bry and Brian Noonan.
Yeah, we spin no matter where we are, whether at a Summerfest, a golf outing, the Republican National Convention, as we are now. We spin the state. If you miss any part of the story or want more information, you can always text SPIN, S-P-I-N, to 855-616.
Oh. 1620?
1620, yeah. I'm so used to having it written down. It's one of those numbers.
It's one of those things. It's not imprinted on. Do you yet?
Yeah, I would listen.
You should get it tattooed on your forearm.
I'm like Ron Burgundy. I have to have it right there. All right. 855-616-1620.
Got it.
I left the easiest part out. All right. Let's spin and see where we go.
Baraboo.
Baraboo. All right. Change is inevitable, and change is coming to three Wisconsin-based long-term care centers. SSM Health announced that it's selling three centers located in Baraboo, Madison, and Waupun to Complete Care. Complete Care now already owns nine other skilled nursing facilities in Wisconsin that are overseen by a regional leadership team that includes more than 900 team members statewide. SSM employees are being asked to stay on under the new ownership to continue caring for patients, and SSM will continue to operate facilities in Fond du Lac and Mount Calvary.
Well, that's good that, the people who work there own it. It doesn't really matter if ownership changes.
I would imagine, as much as we've talked about nursing homes
Yes. And
healthcare shortages, I would imagine, yes, they would love that these people stay on because replacing them would probably be hard.
Exactly. All of a sudden you go from fully staffed to, we made a bad ownership move.
What did we just buy that we can't staff? Yes.
Not good. All right, let's spin it again, shall we?
Fond du Lac.
Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Hey, guess what? SSM Health is in the news again. Who would have thought? But they make another appearance on Spinning the State.
I've never heard of them before, and now yes. I'm hearing of them two times in a row.
And if they appear in the next two spinning stories, there's something going on. There might be some payments
maybe
under the table.
They sponsored this today's spinning.
Perhaps. Anyway, this time they're part of the Fond du Lac County Fair. SSM Health Trafford Studios is working with the fair to make the event more sensory inclusive. The plan is to create a designated area on the fairgrounds for people with sensory needs. So a statement from the county fair said the sensory room will be available for individuals with autism spectrum disorder and related disabilities. The room is going to allow individuals to take a break in an air-conditioned, carpeted room with calming lights, relaxing sounds, and interactive activities. Other amenities are going to include noise-canceling headphones, weighted blankets, and quiet activities to help people process light, smells, noise, and more. So all I think right. that's great.
There you go.
Let's spin it again, shall we?
We shall.
No more to say. That's a good plan.
Greenbush.
Greenbush. All right, well, if you think traffic is rough now, imagine traveling by horse-drawn carriage. If that sounds good to you, Historic Wade House, a Wisconsin Historical Society site, is where you should be this weekend. The Art of Carriage Driving will be on full display during Wade House Carriage Driving Days, which is this weekend. Drivers wearing hats, gloves, and other elegant attire will maneuver their horse-drawn carriages through a number of competitions. Guests will be able to watch drivers navigate antique, reproduced, and modern carriages. A horse-drawn carriage will carry guests from the visitor center to the new horse arena, different than the Panther arena,
sure.
to view the action up close. So the event runs from noon to 4 p.m. Friday, July 19th, 8:30 to 4 on Saturday the 20th, and 8:30 to 3 p.m. Sunday, July 21st. Giddy up.
There you go. That's, oh, man, a modern horse-drawn carriage. I don't know what that would be, but it piques my interest. We have time for one more, so let's spin it.
Toma.
Oh, man. Fireballs in the sky. Wisconsin's had its share of crazy weather lately, but this might soar to the top of the list. People in Toma, Spring Green, McFarland, and Baraboo reported seeing a fireball streaking across the night sky last Thursday.
Ooh.
Yes. Now, I didn't know this organization existed, but the International Meteor Organization confirmed the sightings and labeled it Event 3418-2024. In case you're keeping track at home, and you were a big fan of 3417, well, you've been ousted. The clear sky that night made it easy to see the fireball. It was also visible in Illinois, Iowa, and Minnesota. One witness described the fireball as being, quote, bright and green with a substantial tail approximately four times the length of the spear, end quote.
All right.
That would be kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
If it was a fireball and not, you know, alien invaders, I don't know.
I mean, I think either would be cool to see.
You're right. You're
one
right.
One may have a little more dread.
I don't know.
Than the other.
Which one would you dread more, a meteor hitting or aliens landing in your neighborhood?
Such a ridiculous hypothetical.
Is it? They're very.
Know.
The fireballs are close. You mock.
I think. I don't know. Sure, let's go with. I prefer aliens. Let's
all
go
right.
with that.
All right. Sometimes we must embrace the stupid, Kristen. That's Spinning the State. We do it every day after the 2 o'clock news. If you want more information, text SPIN, SPIN, to 855-616-0620. And when we come back, some things you need to know that happened yesterday around the Republican National Convention. It's Spinning the State.
Welcome back to Spain the State. We are live on Media Row in UWM Panther Arena. And I am Kristen Bry.
You are? I am Brian Noonan. I will bring my microphone down closer to my mouth. That's how it works better. All right. Yesterday was a very exciting day, obviously, the first day of the Republican National Convention. Big things happening all around town. Where do you want to start? I don't want to bury
things,
the lead.
Yeah, so the obvious things we know, right?
Yeah. Donald Trump.
J.D. Vance is the VP. Donald Trump is
gets
what
the
we,
delegates.
Yep.
He's,
so that
he's
part
the
we know.
Man. Yeah, all that.
Some of the unexpected things that happened, the first of which... is the fact that a treat. So there's Convention Fest.
Yes.
Which is actually very cool. There's tons of Wisconsin
right.
Companies out there and.
Food and merch.
Food and merch and Drink Wisconsinly's out there. They have the best lawn signs, political lawn signs you ever see.
I saw you with one of those. I
endorse
may grab
fish
one.
Fries. It's blue. Yeah, it's great. And so, but there was one cheese curd vendor who brought over 360 pounds of cheese to the Convention Fest.
Yeah, just. That's. It's I can't picture 360 pounds of cheese. I've seen that five-pound wheel. We always go back to the five-pound wheel for reference that they brought
into
us.
It's still sitting in my fridge.
Right, but 360 pounds, and I don't know if it was
think
like
of that,
360 of
think
herds.
About when you're, like, squatting. Like, people who are, like, power lifters and stuff of 360 pounds on a, like, a squatting bench.
Well, and if
that's
you...
a lot of cheese.
It is, and if you think of it in... curd size, you figure, all right, maybe a helping of curds that you get at a place, a third of a pound, maybe. So imagine all of those curds.
All and sitting it, in someone's, many people's stomachs right now.
And it was so hot yesterday when they brought 360 pounds of cheese. Just cheese and that much heat. But the vendor seemed to be going through it because anybody who's here from out of town, is going to see cheese. They're going to go, we got to try these.
Yeah.
So they're going to sell them. And there were a lot of people here. So that was good. Good for him. And, yeah, if you have credentials and get in, go check this out. All right. We know about I have to get to this because you referenced it at the beginning of the show. There's a beer war happening here.
It's not a beer war.
There were some comments made, and shots were fired in both directions. And Ron Johnson was basically being asked. I'm getting to
by a political reporter
from who asked him about
Politico reporter.
Yeah. Asked him about Spotted Cow. And Ron Johnson, he said it was fine. I know he said, he basically said, listen, Spotted Cow is great, but their owners are ultra liberal. And Line and Kugel's, they're very conservative.
That's the conservative one.
So he likes Line and Kugel because they're conservative. But being smart, he didn't completely bash Spotted Cow from New Glarus because.
Or maybe he genuinely likes it.
Yeah, but he only drinks it at home in the dark because, God forbid, you start drinking liberal beer, and then you're who knows what you're voting for next. So,
and then, so one of the other things that happened, which we've referenced this before, but yes. There was a Wisconsin pastor from Kenosha who was on the big stage last night, and we have the clip.
And if I may, before the benediction, give you this promise. You're going to be so blessed. You're going to be tired of being blessed. I guarantee it. Believe me. Let us pray.
That has to be a first. That has to be the first time ordained priest, pastor, whatever, started their prayer with an impression of Trump.
Well, I was in Fiserv when they did the benediction after J.D. Vance was announced. There were no impressions.
No impressions.
The person who gave the blessing did not pull out a puppet. There was no musical accompaniment. She just led everybody in a prayer. So this is, you know, I applaud him. It was pretty good as far as Trump impressions go.
And it looks like Trump enjoyed it.
Oh,
he flashed a big smile and applauded as the crowd cheered for the impression.
Well, I would hope so. I would hope he wouldn't just.
Do you do a Trump impression?
No. I don't do impression. I can't. I wish I could.
Do you do accents?
I could do some accents.
All right.
I don't know.
I'm not going to ask you to do it right now.
I was going
to
say.
Think about it and then we'll see. We have to put it in, you know. All right. Well, there's other thing that happened with Ron Johnson along with the beer comment that I want to get to when we come back. Because
all right.
Not only for him, there was teleprompter issues yesterday.
All day.
And so when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the teleprompter issues to poke fun a little bit. But as someone who has to read off a teleprompter every once in a while.
Yeah.
It's not the easiest thing to do in the world, and there's a little bit of that flashpoint of like, oh, this is not what I'm supposed to be reading, so what is my brain supposed to do in this moment? So we will get to that.
All right.
After this.
It's spanning the state.
Home state Senator Ron Johnson gave a speech early in the evening, blasting Democrats for having an agenda that he said would undermine the nation's values.
Their policies are a clear and present danger to America.
In an interview immediately after his speech, Johnson said he stands by that notion. But he also said he wasn't happy because an old version of his speech was loaded in the teleprompter. Johnson said he intended to instead offer lines about healing and unifying the nation. He didn't. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News at the Republican Convention in Milwaukee.
Wow, that was a big flub yesterday, but it was all blamed on the teleprompter.
Which did have issues yesterday.
Yes, there were issues earlier in the day. And
you've performed live many times. I have performed live. And so there is something as far as in that moment you're like, well, the show must go on. Mm-hmm. And so the commitment, even if he did recognize in the moment, you're like, this is not the speech that I'm supposed to be doing, but we're gonna commit.
Yeah, it's different for different types of performances. If you're a politician giving a speech, you don't want to look unprepared. You don't want to look like there was a mistake. So you just keep going. Whereas, like, I'm a big proponent of, oh, this is wrong. Things are not working. We have to fix it. I call it out. Even if I'm the only one who knows it, it would bother me to read the wrong speech. Because then I know the next day, I have to deal with all of this. You know, dealing with the comments. I would rather call it out or just say, this is wrong, but this is... I noticed this was missing from the speech, and I know this is something that I wanted to get across. He must know what he was going to say.
Do you think it was memorized, though?
No, not memorized, but if you really want to talk about unity, you know you wanted to talk about unity, right? Because
don't you read the speech? But I guess to a certain extent, if you are not memorized, you're not off book. And you want to sound strong and confident.
Well, that's what I'm saying. With a politician, you have to just keep rolling.
Yeah.
I, the the funniest part of this story was at the end in the Journal Sentinel. It was quoted as they asked whose fault this was, and his campaign said, "Not us. It wasn't our fault." It's like, okay, that could be true. Who labeled it? You know, that's fine. But I'm with you. You got to keep going. And I guess I just figure, if you're going to do a speech, even if it's on teleprompter, don't you rehearse it a few times? Like, you've at least read it. I'm sure Rod Johnson reads his speeches before he goes out.
I would hope so.
I would hope he does. So that would be the that's my only thing. If you notice at the end that, hey, this isn't right. All right, I wanted to say this. I would also hope that a senator who has been in front of microphones thousands of times can improv two or three lines.
Yeah.
That's my hope.
So anyway, so I thought that was, I did have, as you referenced Ron Burgundy earlier in the show today, so there is that little moment of, from the classic line from, many classic lines from Anchorman, but the, I'm Ron Burgundy?
Ron Burgundy.
And so when you read what's in front of you, sometimes you're like, oh, this is what we're doing. And so, but you know, hopefully tonight there will be less teleprompter issues.
Yes.
But we are not immune from technology issues that sometimes happen to us on this show. Either.
Not at all. And sometimes the technology is my brain that just shorts out. All right, I have to reboot, and we will be back. We've got a very interesting guest coming up after the news.
After the news. So we are going to be talking to Trygve Olsen, who is the senior advisor for Lincoln Project, and he's also a Wisconsin native. But as part of the theme that feels like has come into this week in out of the events from Saturday is unity, is toning down the rhetoric. And so one of the things that the Lincoln Project does is they also have the Lincoln Democracy Institute. Sorry, I want to get the name right.
Yes.
And which does something different from maybe the ads you've seen from Lincoln Project as far as actually doing polls and surveying. And one of the things that they've looked at is political extremism on both sides, and where we're at as a country, and where we really do need to be careful as far as what it could lead to if it's not checked.
Well, I'm looking forward to asking him how you reconcile that, because the Lincoln Project's ads are very effective, but they are not kid glove ads. They come out pretty hard, and I think I think they're very effective. The other side of it is, yes, if we're trying to create this mentality, this, you know, how do we do that?
Yeah.
So we'll do all that. On the other side of the news, ABC News and local headlines are next.
November 5th, 2024. Donald Trump defeats a divided and dispirited Democratic campaign. On January 20th, 2025, Donald Trump is sworn in as the 47th President of the United States. Unfortunately, he keeps his promises.
That is part of an ad that was recently put out by the Lincoln Project. This is spanning the state. Brian Noonan.
I'm Kristen Bry, and we are now joined by Trygve Olsen, senior advisor with the Lincoln Project and Lincoln Democracy Institute, and native Wisconsinite. How are you doing today, Trygve?
I'm good. It's always good to be in Wisconsin.
It's always good to be in Wisconsin. It's always a good day to be from Wisconsin.
It is. It is.
So
Eagles soar, Harleys roar, Packers score. It's pretty much.
That's actually the first time I've ever heard that.
Yeah, right. It's not the first time. I'm stealing Tommy's line.
All right. So speaking of Tommy, that is, you used to work for Tommy. You have a long history of Republican politics.
Long history. Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. You know, I grew up in River Falls, and my parents were pretty active in Republican politics. My mom had coordinated a bunch of counties for Tommy, and like a lot of kids, I was like, I don't really want to be too interested in this. Then they changed the drinking age from 18 to 19, and I didn't get grandfathered in when I was a freshman in college
at
Eau Claire, and that made me politically active.
That's what did it.
That is wow. Really what did
Very
it.
Very nice. Yep. So the Lincoln Project goes pretty hard at Republicans.
We do.
I think everything's very, very effective. But when you walk around here, are people looking at you like, "Hey, you turncoat? You flipped on us."
You used to be friends with a lot of these people.
Bill,
you just saw Bill McCosh.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah.
He was pleasant, but there were other people around and armed security.
Well, no. It's not like Bill and I are going to drop the gloves back in the day when Superior was playing River Falls in hockey. That might have happened. But
Is it weird to be here?
It's a little strange. I mean, I've seen a lot of people that I know. Everybody's pretty nice about it. I mean, it isn't going to be somebody that I know that I would have a problem with.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, I would like to think at the end of the day, Chris Lacevito, who's running the Trump campaign, somebody I used to work with in McConnell World, is a friend of mine. I mean, we went to the Super Bowl when the Packers played the Steelers. He's a Steeler fan. Ben Hunting. I don't think Chris wants me to get beat up here. That wouldn't be very good for the Trump campaign.
So,
if I needed to, I don't think I'll have to ever play that card. But I probably would.
To make sure everyone has context, if they're not familiar with what Lincoln Project is, can you explain what mission is?
So Lincoln Project was founded by a number of us who are former Republicans. And really, from the outset, we've had two goals. One was to get Donald Trump out of the White House and keep him out of the White House, and the other is to confront Trumpism and some of the extremism that we're seeing. And I know in the next, in a little bit, we're going to talk a little bit about extremism and how this is an American problem. It's not necessarily one side or the other, and that's not both sizing it. I mean, we've gone and quantified it, but most of our fire and what people know us for is the big ads that drive Donald Trump nuts, and then he threatens to sue all of us, and because he doesn't like that we're calling him out. What most people don't know is that really since 2020 we've really focused on four states: Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. Whether it was the governor's races in the off cycle or the presidential races, and trying to get disaffected Republicans to place democracy ahead of partisan self-interest.
We asked you before if you still identified as a Republican. Mm-hmm. And what was your answer?
Yeah, no, I still consider myself as a conservative in a very Reagan-esque sort of libertarian way. And I would say this, to me, conservatism meant an understanding. And I did work for John McCain all over the world with people fighting for democracy. That the Russians have been doing what they're doing in Ukraine for a very long time, that there is an evil empire, and that we if they could be doing that in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, they would be doing that to us in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. The idea that you have somebody, J.D. Vance yesterday, who's saying, well, Ukraine's on their own, and we're going to kind of go through life without a lot of friends, that's, to me, is antithetical to being conservative. I would say, I'm pro-life, but I don't want government telling me what kind of shotgun I can own, and I certainly don't want government telling my daughters, who are 13 and 15, what kind of decisions they're going to make with their bodies. And I would hope that, those are family decisions. And that's not the Republican Party of Donald Trump, that traditional libertarian conservatism.
Was that when the break came? That would cause you to say, I'm conservative but not Republican? Was it when Trump took over? Was that when the party kind of broke?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, honestly, I spent, almost two decades working for an organization John McCain ran with those fighting for democracy around the world, the International Republican Institute. And I will tell you that, when Donald Trump said John McCain's not a war hero, that was a bridge too far for me personally in terms of Trump. But no, I think, when he talked about things like, he's going to pull us out of NATO and not honoring Article 5 and, just the big government stuff, I said, this isn't me. And so I'm sort of politically homeless.
Second orphan we've talked to today.
Wow.
All right. We're talking to Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor with the Lincoln Project and Lincoln Democracy Institute. When we come back, we're going to tell you what the Lincoln Democracy Institute is and some of the research they have been doing. Stay with us. This is Spanning the State.
It is Spanning the State. We are on Media Row at the Republican National Convention. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And we are joined by Trigvi Olsen, who is a senior advisor with the Lincoln Project and Lincoln Democracy Institute. And I think more people have probably heard of Lincoln Project than Lincoln Democracy Institute. So what is that?
Yeah, so the Lincoln Democracy Institute we set up as a C4, so from a tax standpoint, it's a nonprofit, and it really is focused on data and understanding of some of the challenges that we face as it relates to Trumpism and extremism more broadly. And so we have been investing quite a large amount in quantitative research, and a lot of it comes out of my work overseas, you know, particularly after 9/11. There was a lot of research done, and I was involved in some projects where we were trying to understand what was creating the anger in the Middle East that people would become, you know, extremist and radicalized and decide, I'm going to take it out by flying airplanes into buildings, right? Mm-hmm. Like that. And so I wanted to try and see, you know, and the people that I worked with back then were all kind of seeing the same things happening in the U.S. Because remember, extremism is a cycle. And so we went out to quantify using the same methods that were used in the Middle East back after 9/11 on the U.S. trying to figure out how bad is the extremism problem. And extremism really has four psychological components. It's psychological distress, acceptance of simplistic answers, overconfidence in those answers, and then ultimately intolerance for those who don't share those beliefs.
And sounds familiar.
It's highly familiar. And as we did that, and then the next step in that would be people who are radicalized and potentially violent, which is based on something called the significant quest theory, is kind of the defining one, and it's need, network, and narrative. So, you know, I need to defend my country and my values. Network, I'm part of patriots who will do this, and narrative, we're gonna go to the Capitol and hang Mike Pence, right? That really is what I saw. So it's interesting because when we did the foundational work, which would have been in April 2023, there were more people who were radicalized on the right, not surprisingly, than on the left. It was about 13% of all Americans fit the significant quest theory, about 10% on the right, 3% on the left. But amongst the extremists, it was about 25% of Americans fit all four, and then there were another 37% who fit three of the four.
An additional 37% or at?
Yeah, so in most of the radicalized would all be part of that extremist. So about 55% of Americans. Subsequently, we've done a bunch of additional research, and if I have one question I can ask, we ask people, do you consider those who don't share your politics trustworthy political opponents or untrustworthy enemies? In a state like Wisconsin, when we did the foundational research, 33% of people said enemies. When we last went in and checked, it's up around 60% today.
Whoa.
It doubled.
Yeah, and the growth, it was already there on the right in Wisconsin. Where the growth has happened is as Trump has been out speaking and saying, you know, talking the way that he's been talking, it has caused people on the left to be like, well, these are my enemies, right? Like, if I'm going to get sent to an internment camp, I guess.
Right.
And that is that cycle that we're seeing. And so you have large levels of extremism on both sides, and it really is a toxicity going through our democracy. And at the end of the day, I'll tell you from all the work around the world, you know, democracy and that win-win is really dependent not on the winning side taking power and governing, but it's dependent on the losing side agreeing to, okay, we're going to have another election in 2 years or 4 years and accepting governance by the other side. And would you really accept governance from your enemies, right? Like, that's the problem we're running into.
When you were doing all the research, is there a tipping point between somebody who's just upset and maybe at the low end of extremism to making that jump to the next level where I went from, all right, I don't really trust, now they're my enemies, and now I have to do something about it?
Yeah, so what I can tell you from other places is when people reach that stage of overconfidence and intolerance, the question of whether they go full on and become radicalized really resides ultimately in, you know, they don't usually sit there in that intolerant stage. They either radicalize or they have something that causes cognitive dissonance that rolls them back and they stop accepting the simplistic answers. You know, as of right now, we're moving in the wrong direction in terms of people getting even more and more ratcheted up about things. And it's why, you know, there are some great organizations. In fact, you put me in touch with David and the Carter Center.
Yeah,
you know, they're doing fantastic work with with my old boss, Scott McCallum.
So people can find the research that you've been doing where?
LincolnDemocracyInstitute.org.
All right. Well, Trygve Olson, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure.
Anytime.
Yeah, stay out there. I'm excited to see what this week is like for you.
Oh, man.
Yeah. All right. It's Fanning the State.
I get to have a great dinner tonight. That's what it means.
I believe it's time for me to fly.
Yeah, the new goodbye song.
The new goodbye song. Every day at 2:55, we're going to listen to this song. Wait, was it? What did Trygve say before? The Eagles soar, the Eagle Packers
soar,
score.
Packers score, somebody roars. Eagles soar, I don't remember.
Someone's going to tell us in the text.
Somebody's going to roar. All right, well, let's thank all our guests today. We had a lot of great guests.
Absolutely.
Today.
We had we just had Trygve Olson. We had Steve Scafidi was on earlier.
Yep. We had Paul Krug. No,
Scott
Paul.
Klug. And I also am looking ahead to tomorrow. I was like, wait, who is today and who is tomorrow? Because tomorrow we have Katie Kingsbury, who is the opinion editor for the New York Times, is going to be joining us.
That'd be great. We've got Peggy. We're going to talk to Treb Heining. He creates the balloon drop. He's created the last 10 RNC balloon drops, so we're going to talk to him. We've got the National Board of Young Republicans.
Well, that's not confirmed yet, but we're going to try to get one. We're trying to get one of the guys who is from Wisconsin.
What about our friend Pam Yonke? She is confirmed.
So she's Pam's going to wade into some a little political waters as far as from a farmer's perspective. And so tomorrow's going to be another great show. I'm going to go out now and collect some RNC scavenger hunt points.
And I'm going to be looking around for the famous that I can, stumble through an interview with.
More Martha Raddatz
interviews. Content. All right. Well, that's all for us. Wisconsin's Afternoon News is next. It's Spanning the State.